Canada Means War, the title of a presentation given at a recent conference held in Montreal, aimed at exploring the realities of Canada's involvement in wars abroad in Palestine, Iraq, and Afghanistan, and at home in regards to Indigenous populations, immigrants, and refugees. Aziz Chaudhry is a Montreal-based activist, researcher, and writer on neoliberal globalization, colonization, and struggles for social and economic justice. Aziz gave a presentation at the conference entitled Canada Means War, which addressed the involvement of Canadian corporations and the government in economic and political disasters throughout the Global South, focusing on the continued displacement of Indigenous people throughout the world. Here is Aziz Chaudhry.
The first time that I came to Great Turtle Island in 1997, which was for the anti-APEC activities over in Vancouver. And I remember having this kind of deja vu experience of being in a settler colonial state called Canada, and having been based in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and watching all of these non-governmental organisations and NGOs and human rights activists talking about the bad Asian countries. And nobody was talking about the fact that Canada sent more troops to the Mohawk Nation than it sent to the Gulf War, and that at the time when Lloyd Axworthy, I think it was going around internationally talking about banning landmines in interior BC at Gustafson Lake in 1995, the Canadian security state was using landmines against Indigenous peoples. So if you want a double standard, then I think that's a very clear example of looking at the disconnect between the humanitarian image of Canada internationally that the government likes to create and the reality, both in terms of what's happening here within the territory that Canada occupies, but also what I'm going to talk about, which is Canada's government and corporations internationally. But I do think that we need to think when we talk about occupation and war, and when we take the streets next week against occupation and war, we need to be talking about opposing occupation and war wherever. Palestine, Iraq, Haiti, but also here in North America, because North America is under colonial occupation. That's not rhetoric. We can see very clearly that these countries, the United States of America, Canada, are built on genocide and dispossession, and that colonisation continues to this day. Where I think that's relevant to understanding Canada's role internationally is to look at the colonial mindset that underpins Canadian international trade and investment policy. When I was thinking about what I wanted to say today, I was wondering what the C stood for in Canada. Is it colonisation? Is it capitalism? Or is it cyanide? Because the mining industry in Canada seems to be spending a lot of time and a lot of effort trying to get gold from places in the Pacific, in the Americas, in Asia, poisoning waterways, poisoning land, using cyanide to take gold away from the ore. And I want to talk a little bit about who some of those companies are and what they're doing and where, and then pull it back and just talk a little bit about sort of the bigger picture. I think it's not a coincidence that Canada, New Zealand, Australia and the US within APEC were the countries that were pushing the neoliberal agenda, the sort of hardline free trade agenda within APEC, harder than any other country. And I think that comes from that colonial mindset that is this worldview that sees everything and everybody as a commodity to be bought and sold in a so-called free market. If we look around the world, I just want to give a few little sketches of where Canadian companies are investing and what they're doing. So the mining industry, okay. We want to talk about war, let's talk about war on the earth. Cambior in Guyana, Canadian company, basically they dumped over 3.2 billion litres of cyanide poison tailings into the Essequibo River in August 95 after a dam collapsed at the Omai gold mine. All the aquatic life in the creek, a 4-kilometre long creek from the mine to the river was killed. In the Pacific, an area where I'm quite familiar with, Placer Dome, great company to do business with. Placer Dome seems to be everywhere, dumping cyanide and toxic waste in all parts of the world, it seems. Millions of tonnes of toxic waste was dumped into the Strickland River in Papua New Guinea, affecting communities, fish and water. And this is in a part of the world where there's a very strong connection to the land. 85% of land in Papua New Guinea is basically held by the people under customary title. And what mining companies like Placer Dome are pushing the Papua New Guinean government to do is to essentially come up with this kind of very neoliberal way of running land tenure so that they can have guarantees so that communities are not going to sort of rise up and say, we don't want you in here because it's our land. This is what is happening in places like Porgera and in Misima, where there's a gold and silver mine, again, owned by Placer Dome in Milne Bay province in Papua New Guinea, where people have been resettled, where the waterways and the fish have been polluted. Again, waste rock and tailings dumped into the river. So just to connect that, how many people here have heard of Carlo Giuliani? Yeah, some people, right? He's a young Italian guy who's murdered by the police. Okay, so how many people here have heard of Simon Nolke? Or Matthew Parwin? Stephen Kill? Thomas Moruo? No? There are four Papua New Guinean young men who were murdered by the Mobile Riot Squad a month before Carlo was shot dead at the G8 protests. In Papua New Guinea, in Port Moresby, there was an anti-privatisation demo, an anti-World Bank demonstration, and four young men were shot dead by the mobile unit of the Papua New Guinean police, trained by Australia. Their job, basically, is to look after overseas mining companies' interests in the highlands of Papua New Guinea, including Canadian companies. So it's interesting. I mean, I think it also tells us about the racism of how we remember the terrible death of a young Italian man, but we don't know the names of people that are being murdered standing up against corporate colonialism in the Pacific. And there's a direct link and a connection there, I think, to the fact that there are Canadian mining companies in that place. Just to carry on, I mean, it seems like there's an endless list of bad examples of mining companies, Canadian mining companies, but just one more, a very big one in Mar Copper mine in Marinduque province in the Philippines, biggest copper mine in the Philippines. Millions of tonnes of tailings in March 1996 went into two rivers there. 10 million hectares of farmland was destroyed. 126 million hectares of land was affected, and a 26-kilometre stretch of river was biologically killed, is biologically dead, 5 days after this incident. What's that got to do with sort of the bigger picture? Well, what do these companies want? They want an investment climate that allows them to do what they want, when they want, without any regulations, without any government controls. And so it's no coincidence that the Canadian government and the Canadian corporations are both pushing an agenda internationally that doesn't want environmental regulations, that doesn't want regulations or laws that recognise Indigenous people's rights, God forbid, and which essentially allow them to repatriate their profit back to Canada without any kind of requirements that money, that profit, stay with local communities. Just to jump away from the mining, let's look at some Montreal examples. Gildan. People know Gildan, the T-shirt manufacturer? So Gildan used to make T-shirts here in Montreal. Now 50% of their manufacturing base is in Honduras. They've also got operations in Haiti. Of course, Canadian troops are in Haiti. They're helping George and the US imperialists right now. SNC-Lavalin, Philippines, they were involved in a light rail project in Manila. The light rail project was for Metro Manila and basically caused the relocation and the demolition of many communities in Metro Manila. And also, just to jump back to the struggle of our comrade Mohamed Cherfi, I'm sure people here remember that in April, May 2002, when the moratorium against deporting non-status Algerians back to Algeria came off, Jean Chrétien was in Algeria on a trade and economic mission, and surprise, surprise, a month later, SNC-Lavalin has a contract to provide water diversion project, a $141 million in Canadian dollars project was announced, and they've got other interests in Algeria. SNC-Lavalin is a big player internationally in terms of the privatisation of services like water and in construction and so on. So you've got T-shirt companies, you've got mining companies, you've got service providers, you've got companies like Diamond Works. Diamond Works, which has got very... It's listed on the Vancouver Stock Exchange, has very shady and disgusting connections with mercenary forces like Executive Outcomes and Sandline that have been used in Sierra Leone in Africa and also in Papua New Guinea at a time when the Papua New Guinea government was trying to use mercenaries basically to go into Bougainville to put down an indigenous uprising against an Australian-owned copper mine. They're a Canadian company, Diamond Works. And surprise, surprise, just after there was a mercenary involvement in Sierra Leone in 1995, Diamond Works got a concession for Sierra Leone's diamonds a few months later. Again, they're in there. If we want to look at the role that Canada plays, and I think we need to see that there's a revolving door between these corporations and the Canadian government. If we look at Paul Martin, we look at Jim Peterson, the current trade minister, they're big corporate players. I mean, Peterson comes from the banking industry. Martin's got the steamship stuff and a few other things going on. And so their interests kind of cohere, their interests come together. And so it's not surprising to see that Canada at the World Trade Organization or in the FTAA or in other international fora, like its role in the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, is pushing policies that will open up countries for Canadian capital. And so in the WTO, Canada is part of the Quad, which is the four countries essentially that dominate the WTO, Canada, the US, European Union, and Japan. It's trying to get a similar kind of deal to the Central American Free Trade Agreement that the US has just stitched up with four Central American countries. And remember, again, Gildan, for example, there, you've got good examples of Canadian companies trying to get into and using offshore cheaper labour, lower environmental regulations and wages and so on. And it's easy to see where the corporate and the government, sort of the official connection, link up. If you look at agriculture, Canada is one of the most vocal advocates for free trade in agriculture. It's part of the Cairns Group, which has a very extremist position on free trade, wants to get rid of all barriers to trade in agriculture. And it's interesting then to look at what peasant farmers and small farmers are saying against what Canada and New Zealand and the US and Australian governments are saying, because they're saying, well, hang on, you know, you're essentially pushing this model of corporate agriculture, of biotechnology, of treating food and food production merely as a commodity through your position in the World Trade Organization. If you look at biotechnology, Canada is pushing biotechnology literally into the mouths and stomachs of people around the world. That's, again, government and corporations. Canada is a signatory to the complaint that the US has taken against the European Union against its moratorium on genetically modified crops and food at the World Trade Organization. Canada last month in Kuala Lumpur, along with the US and Mexico, is pushing a trilateral agreement which would undermine the biosafety protocol and would essentially allow for a much higher level of genetically modified GM contamination of crops to be acceptable, whereas there are some countries that are trying to find ways to actually limit the spread and contamination of crop. Just to wrap up, I just want to sort of pull a couple of things together here. The Canadian Council of Chief Executives, which is the voice of big business in Canada, both Canadian transnational corporations and US subsidiaries thereof, are pushing to have this thing called the North American Security and Prosperity Initiative. And Paul Martin has also got this, what's it called, deep integration policy that he wants to see security and economically closer connections between the US and Canada. So again, you can see these sort of this cohesion of these initiatives where Thomas D'Aquino, who's the president of the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, is talking about reinventing borders, maximising economic efficiencies, negotiating competitive resources, a security pact that's going to reinvigorate the defence alliance and creating a new institutional framework. So you've got the links between essentially US and Canadian capital and US and Canadian governments happening at the same time. Just to conclude, another thing that we should not forget is the role of Canadian official development assistance overseas. CEDA has a branch called the CEDA Industrial Cooperation Program, which essentially helps out Canadian big businesses with financial support and advice for them to invest in the so-called developing countries. They have been involved with a number of very dodgy, very concerning deals, such as in Belize in Central America, where the Canadian company Fortis is involved in an environmentally destructive dam project in the rainforest at Cholilo. That has been backed by CEDA. CEDA has also been involved in essentially trying to sell old, defunct nuclear reactors, CANDU nuclear reactors, to Thailand. They actually had a program in schools, in high schools. CEDA was backing a public education program to try and get school kids to think that nuclear technology was kind of nice and sensitive and new age and friendly. So they'd go home and tell their mums and dads, hey, these nice Canadians, they've got nuclear power plants it would be really cool if we had them in Thailand because, you know, we could all kind of, glow in the dark or something. And essentially you had the Atomic Energy of Canada, a company that was trying to dump them and find markets, and CEDA was saying, hey, we can help you guys out. We can get Thai school kids to say, you know, go can do. I think, it is really important that, and I'm very conscious, having lived in Aotearoa, New Zealand, of this kind of interplay between, you know, good New Zealand and bad Australia. And here in Canada, you sometimes have this kind of good Canada, nice Canada, bad US. That, in fact, it's very hard to distinguish between the kinds of policies that the governments have and certainly the kinds of activities that the corporations have internationally.
You have been listening to a presentation from Aziz Chaudhry, a Montreal-based activist, researcher, and writer on neoliberal globalization, colonization, and struggles for social, political, and economic justice. The presentation was given at a recent conference held in Montreal, which was aimed at exploring the realities of Canada's involvement in wars abroad in Palestine, Iraq, and Afghanistan, and at home in regards to indigenous populations, immigrants, and refugees. To read writings of Aziz Chaudhry, visit www.zmag.org. This piece was recorded and produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stéphane Christophe.